and welcome to the Regeneration Ministries podcast. My name is Josh Glazer. I'm the Executive Director of Regeneration, and we are here to help you and your loved ones grow in sexual, relational, and emotional wholeness. Each week in this podcast, we're going to tackle different topics that will help you do just that.
Hello, friends. Josh Glazer here. I'm here this morning with Dan Kiefer, and we're going to be talking about intimacy as it relates to sexual addiction. So one of the first places it came for me was as I came here at Regeneration to get help with my own sexual addiction. I was kind of surprised because I knew I had this habit. I knew I wanted to stop it. I knew God didn't like it. I knew I had kind of this love-hate relationship with it. But one of the things that struck me is as I listened to the teachings and heard guys around me who were getting better start talking, intimacy was such a big part of the conversation. And it just wasn't something that I'd really thought a whole lot about up to that point. And I certainly didn't connect it with this problem. So we're going to try to unpack that a little bit in our conversation today. So when you hear the words sexual addiction and intimacy, Dan, what are some of the first things that come to mind for you?
Well, one of the first things that comes to mind is so often turning to pornography or sexually acting out behavior isn't an effort to feel connected. It's an effort to feel known. It's an effort to have an experience of a connection with someone or something, even if it's obviously an image on a screen or in a magazine or fantasy. It can kind of create that sense of being connected, even though it's not real. But then when guys start experiencing connection and being known by other people in healthy friendships, it has an incredible power in providing greater freedom from those other areas that they would go to.
Okay, so all right, so let me push into that a little bit, because one of the things you said was like guys going to pornography for a sense of connection or to connect, even though it's not really there. Like, so my memory was certainly like as I was looking at pornography for the years that I did, I wasn't going thinking like, hey, I need connection. I'm looking at, you know, so let me go here to find it. So talk to us a little bit about that. Like,
yeah, that's so true. Even in saying that, it sounds kind of counterintuitive. And I don't know how many times I've said that to guys, and they kind of look at me like tilt their head like a dog, as if like, what are you saying? That's not what it's about. Yeah. But what happens is guys are in groups, like you may have experienced here at Regeneration in group, when you have that sense of, okay, I'm not the only one that's struggling with this. And here's other guys that I can share this with. They don't look at me sideways. They get it. And I'm actually being known by them. And that part of me that I'm afraid to let out, I'm afraid to have exposed, once it's there and I find this non-judgmental acceptance, it has a way of creating a sense of almost being full in a way that pursuing something that's false, that false intimacy, doesn't provide.
Yeah. So there are two sides to this coin. Like, so the one side is, what am I really pursuing when I'm going to porn? And the reality that a lot of us, well, I'd say like most people come here, when they go, they don't know what they're looking for. They might know that they're feeling like, I have talked to guys more and more recently. It seems like guys understand, like, I'm feeling stressed. But I think it's not real common for guys to recognize that somewhere underneath this, I'm looking for intimacy. I'm looking for a connection. And because in the back of their minds, they also know, like, it's not really here, but I'm looking for some kind of connection. And the flip side that you're bringing up is, as I begin to experience real authentic connection, where I'm sharing the dirt of my life, I'm sharing the parts of me maybe that I think are the most ugly or most reason to reject me, that actually makes a difference in my battle against pornography. One of the things that I've told guys, like, as they're kind of even maybe questioning, am I really going to porn for connection? Like, I don't really feel like I'm lonely or anything like that. Like, one of the things that I'm just stunned by, I think the way that God has made us is nakedness by its very nature, I think, communicates something relationally. I mean, like, you know, I heard Christopher West say once that a man's body doesn't make sense biologically apart from a woman's body, and a woman's body doesn't make sense biologically apart from a man's body. I mean, there's just something kind of imprinted on us that says relationship. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I think on some, well, I guess I am saying on some subconscious level, I think in the years where I was looking to pornography, something in me was feeling like there's something connecting me to someone else here.
And there's a resource by, I think it's Dr. William Struthers, his book Wired for Intimacy. It's a book specifically about men and how they, you know, we're designed for that, as you're saying. And so often we turn to things like pornography and fantasy because the way we experience it as if this image is choosing me or this image is desiring to be known. And so that's where some of the power is. So as I understand what Dr. Struthers and others have written about, our brain experiences it as if we're actually in it.
Huh.
And so that is powerful and intoxicating, particularly if we're not experiencing that intimacy and connection and being known with other people in real face-to-face relationships.
So you're saying this Wired for Intimacy, Dr. William Struthers says, in essence, that even though we may know on a conscious level there's nobody else here, our brains experience it as though somebody is.
That's as I understand it. Yeah, and it's powerful. And one of the connections I make as I've shared that is, you know, if you watch a video or you're at a 3D IMAX kind of thing watching a movie, and let's say it's a movie of being on a roller coaster, your seat is not moving,
right.
But what are you feeling in your body?
Yeah.
You're feeling as though you're on the roller coaster. And my bet would be that your hands would potentially start sweating and heart rate would begin to elevate. You can sit there and tell yourself, I'm not on the roller coaster, but everything in your body tells you that you are.
Yeah.
And I don't think the experience of pornography is that different from that.
That's a great illustration. I love that. All right. So I had another question. I've tried to remember what it was, but here it is. Talk to me a little bit about why would somebody, and I think you and I both have some things to say about this, why would somebody, if we are looking for connection, why would we end up going to porn instead of to a real other person for a conversation or for a hug or for some other type of connection?
I think so often, and in the field of coaching and counseling and group work, to start talking about families, like the families you grow up in, that sounds like the stereotype of, well, tell me about your family. And yet there's a lot of truth to it. And it's not about trying to point fingers at our parents, whatever the dynamics were in their lives that impacted how they parented. But our families shape how we connect with others. So if we had a secure sense of connection, if we were well attached growing up, if we felt secure, then the likelihood of turning to something like pornography, it's not going to have the same allure because we've had that sense of security. But if we're insecure, if we feel anxious or if we avoid connection, then it's less likely that we're going to be seeking out healthy connection with other people.
Yeah.
And when we're exposed to something like pornography, it's like it gets its hooks in us, or it speaks to something deep. It calls us out almost and invites us into what feels like something we've never had before.
Yeah.
And that's where the intoxicating nature of it can be. And this can happen as early as, you know, 6, 7, 8 years of age.
Yeah. So here's another reality. And this is, when we talk about family of origin stuff, I think like some people listening, I think might hear that and say, okay, well, my family wasn't like that. We were connected. I did feel loved by my parents. I did connect with them. We did have good conversations, and yet pornography still drew me. I think that certainly could be true. But I think one of the realities for me was that also was the way that I thought about my family. I thought, you know, we really do love each other. We're not perfect, but we love each other. I feel connected there. I feel accepted there. And so when I first started hearing this thing about like, no, it's like pornography is a search for intimacy in a place that doesn't provide it, I was like, I don't know that that's really my story. But the further I kind of pressed into it, I realized, oh, you know what? Just my family of origin, it was what I grew up with. And yeah, there was connection there, but there was also disconnection there. There was also dysfunction there. There were ways that my mom, my dad, my brothers, the rest of us, like we didn't know how to connect with each other. And so even though I thought it was healthy, I thought it was fulfilling, there was still longing in me. And so to anybody who's listening, who might be thinking, I don't think I'm looking for intimacy there. I don't think that's a part of my story. Maybe, you know, I feel like I got healthy connections. I would just say to you, like, you don't have to take our word for it, but it might be an indicator. There might be something in your soul that's crying out for more intimacy than you have known, or more intimacy than you have. And so it might just be a fair question to turn back to the Lord to say, Jesus, am I looking for intimacy here? And if so, why? Dan, what are some of the what are some of the I'm going to use these word in quote, this word in quotes, what are some of the benefits of going to porn as opposed to a real relationship?
Well, yeah, some of the quote unquote benefits can be that it feels completely safe in that there's no fear of being rejected. Mm-hmm. An image is not going to reject you.
Yeah.
An image is always going to say yes. An image is going to give you what you believe you desire in that moment. And the downside of all that, though, is that when you're done looking at the pornography, all that goes away,
right,
the shame and regret and guilt and that, just that, I make a joke sometimes about using a clinical term, yuck. You just feel like yuck.
Yeah.
And that leaves you at a place of despair and the shame. And again, when you think about even the addiction being having a cyclical nature to it, it's that shame that so often drives us to go back to it again, believing that, you know, this time I'll have the experience that I'm looking for. But it's like the guy drinking salt water. You know, you just end up being more thirsty and not having ultimately what you long for.
Yeah, I think so. You talked about the quote unquote benefit of porn as opposed to a real relationship can include, like, I'm not going to be rejected here. I think there was also the quote unquote freedom of the perfect person. So this, because it's an image, because it's on a screen, because it's doctored, because it's because fantasy is included, I can make it anything I want it to be. Whereas in real relationships, the person has faults, they failure, they get sick, they're not available when I want them to be available. This person is always available, and they can kind of be that fantasy perfect person. So this image or this video or this fantasy ends up being this kind of, it's fictional, but it can be this perfect relationship. The other thing about it is that because the fantasy and pornography or fantasy and sexual addiction are kind of always mixed together, like I can be who I want to be. You know, in real relationships, somebody gets to know me and they find out, oh, you know what? Josh stinks sometimes. He's not the guy that I, and that's hard. It's hard. And that, maybe that goes back to the rejection piece, but in the fantasy, you know, the what's happening in the video or in the image all looks like I'm fully accepted into this moment, and there's no and so I'm fully worthwhile in this moment. I'm fully validated in this moment, even though it's fiction. It still, maybe that goes back to the brain thing. My brain still feels like, yeah, this is the validation I'm looking for.
Yeah, and there's also you know, the different types of intimacy. There's like the intimacy that was experienced in the garden, that was perfect intimacy. Yeah. Adam and Eve fully knew one another. And there was no shame present at all. They fully knew God. And then out of that, you know, obviously sin comes into the world. And then it's this battle between false intimacy and real intimacy. False intimacy being pursuing an illusion, believing this is going to provide life. And not only will it provide life, but it's going to prevent me from experiencing pain. And so that's another reason why we'll pursue what's false, as opposed to the real intimacy. And this is so much about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when you talk about Josh stinks sometimes, you know, it means that, like, Dan doesn't have his act together all the time. Dan gets impatient. Dan wants his own way. Dan is selfish. Dan, you know, ... go on.
I was thinking all those same things about you just now.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So I'm just glad that, you know, in this relationship of authenticity, you can tell me that. So it's, the real intimacy is where you experience the pain, but then without experience the pain, I don't know that we can truly experience joy and what it is to be known. Because it's when my wife is able to see all my brokenness and able to say, you know what, I still choose you and I still love you. Mm. That being known is powerful.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so here's, let's shift gears here. You mentioned this earlier as we were talking. We've talked about why people would choose pornography as opposed to real authenticity, pursuing real relational intimacy. So you talked about a little bit about why real intimacy actually is a part of healing and finding freedom from sexual addiction. So, and I think you're getting into it there when you talk about, well, gosh, when we experience somebody who really knows me, and I know The place where I would begin with that, and I almost, not almost, but offer it as even a prescription. If you're listening, you're a man or a woman and you're struggling with a sexually addictive behavior, part of the prescription we'd write for you is confession. Confession. You need to find some environment, some safe person or safe group, a therapist, a counselor, a spiritual coach, a recovery group, where you can let the truth be known. What is the good, the bad, and the ugly about what you've been walking in? And confession is a part of that. It's a place where somebody knows my junk, the bad stuff that I have done that I can't blame anybody else for, and they hear it and they know it. And I remember for me, like, there are times in early recovery or in early accountability relationships where I would share with somebody else the truth about what I'd done and then get up to go and they'd give me a hug, or they'd say, like, the classic, you know, line in Alcoholics Anonymous and Sexaholics Anonymous is, "Thanks for sharing." And just the different way that made my heart feel, as opposed to the porn. I mean, it was a very different kind of experience of acceptance than pornography.
So one of the things that I've encountered is when an individual is experiencing real connection, real being known by another person, I've said, so when you're experiencing that sense of being known, is your heart drawn towards pornography? Is that where you find yourself wanting to go? And I've yet to have a person say to me, absolutely, I still want to go there. Because the reality right. is, when they're experiencing that real true connection, that real being known, this other stuff, the pornography, fantasy, doesn't hold any weight compared to the weightiness and the significance of being known by another.
Yeah, yeah. I can resonate with that, both experientially and also in my work here with others at Regen. Like, there is something. So I've confessed the truth and experienced the forgiveness of God, reconnecting with God, reconnecting with others in a way where they know this truth about me, and they still love me. And I leave with this diminished desire, this diminished temptation. I think the other people can resonate with that too. So we want to kind of bring this to a close. There's so much more we can say about this, but it probably would be worth saying at the end that growing in relational intimacy is a process. And so we're not trying to suggest here that, hey, as we're talking about sexual addiction and intimacy, if you're struggling with sexual addiction today and it's at the high watermark in your life, if you just go out and have a good conversation with somebody, like, you're good. We're actually talking about, like, becoming people who both know how to have healthy intimate relationships, healthy non-sexual intimate relationships with other people, and who are practicing that on a regular basis in their lives.
And there's a word that sometimes gets overused, but I think it applies here, and the fact that it's a journey. And yeah. We're going to have our ups and downs. And so even if a person is experiencing that intimacy and experiencing a freedom from the desire to go to pornography, but then somewhere down the road they return to pornography, it's not an aspect of, oh, you failed or you haven't tried hard enough. But it's that opportunity to step back and say, okay, was there some place somehow where I wasn't quite feeling connected?
Okay, Dan, so let me ask you this question, because I know as we talk about intimacy and, like, okay, if intimacy really does matter, good, healthy, non-sexual relational intimacy matters for freedom from sexual addiction. I know there are going to be some people who hear that, because I was one of them who's going to say, well, hold on, like, I'm a believer. I've got God. Like, God is enough for me. I mean, Jesus is, he's the answer, right? So what do you say to that?
Yeah, that's a question that is not uncommon at all. So what I do is I think back, okay, well, what about the garden? So God creates Adam, God creates the animals, God assigns Adam the task of naming the animals. And I get this picture of Adam going through and thinking, wow, they've all got one for them. There's two and they're different. And God, what about me? Yeah, and so what does God say? God doesn't say, well, Adam, you got me. It's all good.
But God
says, it's not good for you to be alone.
Yeah.
And so then Eve is created. And so at that point, that's a declaration for all time, I believe. God saying it's not good to be alone.
Right. And then I think about Jesus. So if Jesus is our model, if he's like our archetype of like relational health, well, he picked these 12 guys. And apparently there were some women who were kind of in the circle, you know, they were orbiting this in some way too, that he chose to live his life with. And in the midst of those 12, there were three that seemed to be extra close to him. And in the midst of those three, there was this one, John, who was so close to him, even physically, that he would lean his breast upon Jesus or lean upon Jesus's chest when they're reclining at the table. So there was this relational intimacy. And if Jesus needed that or lived that out, like certainly we do too. But the other thing that comes to mind for me is that I think in the midst of the question of like, well, wait, I've got Jesus, I don't need this other stuff. I think the good spark in the midst of that question is the reality, like, yeah, even the best human relationships like are not a substitute for what we're really ultimately longing for, which is a deep connection with God. It's not an either or, it's a both and. Like, we're created for deep, intimate relationships with other people, and we are definitely created for this deep, intimate union with God.
And when we're not experiencing that deep, intimate union with God, that's when we're setting ourselves up to use people to fill a place or to be what only God can be for us.
Yeah.
And that's where we start possibly disconnecting from the real intimacy and pursuing the false intimacy.
All right. I feel another conversation coming on, but we're going to pause there.
Absolutely.
Friends, we hope this conversation has been helpful for you. And I know this topic is certainly one that men and women all over the place are grappling with. So let's keep the conversation going. And Dan, thanks for your time today.
Good. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks so much for listening today. We hope what you heard will be helpful to you in your journey. If you or a friend or loved one want to go deeper into these topics, please know that Regeneration also offers spiritual coaching and intensive support group programs for men and women seeking sexual and relational wholeness, both in the Baltimore areas and in Northern Virginia. Also, none of this would be possible without the help of our donors. So if you feel like you've benefited and want to support the work that we're doing, please go to regenerationministries.org/donate, or you can just go to our website and click the donate button. Thanks again, and we look forward to talking again with you next week.